All right, Randy, what's going on?
How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing fine. I was wondering, what did you think would be a fun thing to talk about this week?
This week, we're going to talk about the Island of Stability.
The Island of Stability. What's being stable in the Island of Stability?
Well, I'm kind of surprised that more people don't know about this, and the people that do know about it don't seem to really know what the current state of physics is with the Island of Stability. So I thought it would be a good topic to talk about. And the Island of Stability, I love the name. It's, if you look at the spectrum of isotopes in the elemental chart, it extends up to a certain point around uranium, and then beyond that, the stability quickly declines. And so these really heavy elements get more and more unstable. But there has been hypothesized and theorized for many decades now, I think since the 50s and 60s, that because of nuclear shell structure laws and principles governing the nucleus, that there would be this region out way past uranium of these really heavy elements that could be fairly stable, when researchers have been trying to reach it for quite a long time. And it's kind of fascinating to see the work they've been doing, especially in Russia and at the Oak Ridge National Research Laboratories, I think it is. Oak Ridge.
Yeah, is it Oak Ridge or is it Lawrence Berkeley?
Well, I think they do it too, the Lawrence Livermore. So there's some great physicists around the world working on it, but it seems like my favorite papers have been coming from some Russian physicists that have some really good technology out there.
Some Russian physicists with good technology.
Yep, it seems like the Russians are kind of leading the pack on this stuff. There's a physicist named Dr. Oganessian, and he seems to be the head of this team of researchers out there at the Joint Institute for Nuclear Research in Dubno, Russia. And when there was some debating going on, I made the mistake of trying to chat on a comments thread in some science board and quickly realized that I was being attacked for knowing more than the people there. So I wanted to do this episode because there are elements, fairly stable elements that we humans have never seen before, and they're making progress towards the Island of Stability. So I thought we'd talk about the state of that research.
So you're saying that there is somewhere some pocket of isotopes that are stable, that are much heavier than uranium. How close are we to getting to those isotopes, or actually how close are we to getting those elements? Let's start with that.
Well, that gets to be a little bit more complicated than many people realize, too, because I think uranium element 92 is the last fully permanently stable element. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it's the last naturally occurring one. I'm not sure if they'd call that stable because it is radioactive.
Are all the isotopes of uranium radioactive?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think you're right. But it was a 235, I think, is maybe the most stable one.
So when I went back to, say, my old modern physics book that I used to teach out of, they have a meaning of stability that's a little bit different than the meaning in these papers, right? I get sort of the idea that for these papers, what they really care about as far as stability is something that'll stay around long enough that they can make enough of it to turn into a target to try to make more stuff. So like berkelium, that lasts for long enough, a few years. I don't remember exactly what the half-life was, but it lasts for much more than a year. Not a huge amount of time as far as most things are concerned, but still lasts long enough that, you know, you can make a target and you can do some of these experiments, because these experiments have such a low yield that to get a reasonable amount of something that you can actually say that, yes, we actually detected it, takes a very long time. So these experiments run for months. So something has to live long enough for that to actually be possible. So when they're talking about stability, they have at least three different definitions.
Right.
One is something that's really stable, like iron. Iron's just going to sit there and it's not really going to turn into anything. One is something that's going to last long enough for them to make a target, and one is stable enough for them to actually detect it. And as far as the detectors are concerned, that means it has to last longer than a microsecond. So stable can mean, depending on what they're actually talking about at the time, it can mean longer than a microsecond. But the Island of Stability is stuff that's going to last longer than that. I think it's longer than a second.
That's the exciting thing about the island, is we don't know how stable these most stable isotopes will be on the Island of Stability, but there are estimates that I've seen ranging everywhere from like a year or less to up to a million years. I mean, there's this wild range of possibilities, and we have no idea what we're going to find when we get there.
Yeah, I think they had about 100 years for Copernicium in this paper.
Yeah, that's a rough one. There's also an Einsteinium they talked about. It's like, wow.
Yeah, Einsteinium was like 271 days, so they were thinking about using it as a target, I think. And that's because, you know, it's one more than berkelium, which they're currently using as targets. So the way they do these things is they take a projectile particle and hit the target particle with it. And the target particle has to be something that's long-lived. To make this element 118, which has been named, and I wrote it down somewhere and I forgot what it was called. Do you remember what 118 was called?
I don't remember it by name. I remember that 115 is moscovium.
Okay. So it's oganesson.
I think it's oganessian.
No, oganesson.
Oh, you're talking about an element. They named one after him.
Element 118, the heaviest element that they've made so far, oganesson, is named after Yuri Oganessian, who is the guy who discovered it.
Nice.
So yeah, he's already been enshrined in all this. And that's the heaviest one right now. That was taking the calcium and hitting with the berkelium. That's how they were making it. And then that would cascade down. And I think it's copernicium, according to these guys, is what's going to be the really, really stable element, if they can get it really, really stable.
Do you know which number that is in terms of proton number?
112.
Oh, 112, yeah. Because it's like a mini region of like island stability before you get to the other island of stability.
I think that the island of stability that they keep talking about, that's the reason why I wanted to talk about this in two parts, is it's actually the one that's pretty close to where we are right now. The one that they're pretty sure really does exist is centered at element 114, the flerovium. So it's centered at the flerovium 114, but the one that's supposed to be really, really stable, that would have a 100-year half-life or something, they say it, the beta-stable copernicium would have a 100-year half-life in this paper. That's at 112. It's not in the center of it. But the problem is that right now everything we have is sort of neutron deficient.
It's neutron deficient now because this is a simple problem conceptually, is that as you get heavier and heavier elements, they require more and more neutrons in order to stick together because the protons want to repel them apart. But how do you make a heavier element when the component parts have a lower ratio of neutrons to protons? So it's tricky. You've got to get the right balance of neutrons to reach the center of the island of stability, and they can't do that with current technologies and targets and everything.
That's really this issue here, is that the stable copernicium would have a atomic weight of something in the 290s. I think 292. And the closest they've gotten is a 286. And that was actually in 2016. I don't think that's been verified. I think a group in Japan made it. It hasn't actually been verified by another group or anything that was actually what happened.
So yeah, how are they going to get those extra neutrons in there? This is the part that confuses most people in the public, is they hear that they've made elements, you know, 114, 115, 118, whatever, and that it lasts this long. And they think that's the end of the story. Like, oh, we've made that, and that's unstable. It's like, well, we've made that isotope of it, but there are isotopes that our best mathematical models predict to be much more stable that require more neutrons than we can synthesize them with. So we may be in for some pleasant surprises as they get further. They say that they're on the shores of the island right now because they've detected these increasing stabilities across what they call the sea of instability. There's this region, I guess, between, you know, plutonium and all that, and these super heavy elements, where the isotopes decay almost instantaneously. So it's really tricky to get across that sea in order to get to the island. And they've just started seeing indications that they've got some more stable elements way out here, but there's more beyond that that we can't reach. And they've talked about in some of the papers we looked at techniques that they might employ to try to get there. But we're not there yet. We've never really reached the center of the island of stability. I really wonder what those atoms are going to be like. I think they mentioned that because they're so dense that they're probably going to be extremely strong. Like, you think about how the military uses depleted uranium in order to make bunker busters and things like that because it's such a hard metal. Well, just imagine how hard these things would be.
I think some of the stuff I was looking at, I noticed that people are actually trying to theoretically predict what the chemistry of these different elements are. It's kind of strange that they're looking at the chemical properties of these elements when they can't make enough of them to actually do anything with them. Or in some cases, they don't even have any of them, right? They've never been able to make them.
Yeah, I guess the chemical properties for all of the different isotopes would be pretty much the same. So if they can detect a tiny bit of it for a fleeting instant, they might be able to verify some of their chemical predictions. There's a few different paths that they talked about on how they might go about creating elements or isotopes that are in the center of the island of stability. And you know what? I'm a little confused too, because I think it might have been the synthesis of a new element with atomic number Z equals 117. It said that there could be stable isotopes on the island with a proton number greater than 120. They don't know how big the island is yet, huh?
Yeah, so the different ways that they make these calculations, they have several ways that they do these calculations. They give slightly different locations and sizes and so forth for the islands. And in fact, the kind of calculations that these guys have been doing show an additional island that's farther out, somewhere around atomic number 130. That goes from like 120 on up, but they have like neutron numbers of almost 200. I mean, they're going to be really, really heavy, but there's a big gap in between them where everything's less than 1 microsecond, at least as far as the calculations are concerned. And getting up there, they say that that's going to be tricky. Like I said, right now what they do, and I'm sorry, it was element 117. The reaction I was talking about earlier actually is for tennessine, not oganessen. These things, you know, they're taking these earlier transuranic elements and then hitting them with other elements and getting up there. But how long can you do that, right? I guess they could take two really, really heavy things, but I'm not sure if that's actually something they can do. I guess it's not something they can do, otherwise they'd be doing it, right? And all of these things are really expensive, right? So all of the sort of things that they're doing with these, all these experiments are extremely expensive.
Yeah, they said that they might be able to create some of these isotopes, the really super heavy ones, using a next generation pulsed nuclear reactor, but they'd have to increase the intensity of the reactor by like 3 orders of magnitude.
That's a good idea.
That sounds really difficult. It's like, this is a nice reactor, but we really need one 1,000 times more powerful. It's like, holy shit.
What can you really do? I mean, you know, they're just not able to get to where they need to go right now, but they're fairly close for the traditional island of stability. That other one that may or may not exist, like I said, that only some calculations show exist, that's way out there. So if they can't figure out how to get to this closer one, I don't think they're going to find a way to get to that farther one.
Well, they did have this idea in which one of these papers, which see which one of these things was it? The future of super heavy element research, which nuclei could be synthesized within the next few years. That one talks about colliding a uranium-238 with copernicium-248 in the like 750 million electron volt range. But I think the problem is that the copernicium that we have now only lasts a little while. So how do you maintain that in an accelerator, you know?
I think they don't have anything heavier than einsteinium that they can create in any sort of quantity.
Right, in any lasting quantity.
I think they need a certain amount of it even before you get to the decay. Even before you start worrying about the decay, you probably need a certain amount of it to have this target that's even sitting around in your reactor.
Right, and they need like milligrams of it in order to do the thing, and they can't make milligrams of this stuff.
So einsteinium right now is the last thing. Now, if they could get to the stable copernicium, then if it's got a 100-year half-life, no matter what the yield is, and it's probably going to be pretty small judging from the yields on the things that they're getting right now, they can probably wait long enough to make enough of it to do things. It will be really expensive, but again, you'll be able to wait long enough to get enough of it to go to the next experiment where you throw something heavy at something heavy and get something heavy.
So we haven't made the really stable copernicium yet.
No, we're a ways away from that. Like I said, between the time that this paper came out and now, they've only improved by one neutron, right? And they need another 4 or 5 to get there.
Jesus. It's pretty amazing to read how they do this. It's like they put the target material, like the berkelium?
Berkelium. That one's easy. It's comparative to Berkelium. Some of them. Yeah.
They put that on like these little tin foil kind of sheets, and they stack it up. It sounds like they put it around the rim of a spinning disk, and then they fire this crazy intense beam of projectile nuclei at it. And it's a really intense beam. It's like, let me see, what is it here? 10 to the 8th particles per second. And they let that run for like 250 days. That's a lot of energy. And so I guess they're going to try to do that with the einsteinium one of these days when they can get enough of that stuff together, I guess. But it just sounds like an amazing thing to see. I don't understand why the target has to spin. They talk about it, they use the term cold fusion, although that's a misnomer in a sense. They just mean like a fairly low energy beam, right?
I thought cold and hot referred to the projectile element. I thought that had something to do with the nuclear state of that projectile element, but I could very well be wrong.
I think that there's better cross-section, and so they can use a lower energy with the, I think it's a cadmium isotope, 48, than with some of the other isotopes, which have a lower cross-section. They have to use a higher energy beam, and so when it fuses, it doesn't fuse with the same, it doesn't heat up the nucleus as much, which is good, because then it's more stable. But it talked about how they'd have to increase the intensity. Oh, no, that was a neutron. There's also a neutron synthesis technique they talked about, where maybe you could saturate these heavy nuclei with just a constant flow of neutrons.
Yeah, so we're talking about adding a neutron source somewhere in this, and hopefully by throwing the neutrons in there, you get sort of a four-particle scattering or something like that, and you'd be able to occasionally get some of those neutrons to stick in there when you put these through. That sounds a lot like wishful thinking to me, but maybe they can make it happen. I think you'd probably need to get a chance for that to happen that's relatively good. I think you need a pretty intense beam of neutrons.
Yeah, they were talking about, I think, how they need to increase the intensity of neutron beam sources by like four orders of magnitude.
Okay, yeah, that's nothing.
It's only 10,000 times stronger than anything we have today. What was the other thing they talked about? They talked about how supernovae and colliding neutron stars is another way they might be able to create these babies.
That's good. That's exactly where they should build their next reactor.
We'll just collide a couple neutron stars together. So then they were saying that that means that there should be some of these super heavy elements, if they're stable enough, in cosmic rays. But they'd be so freaking rare that, you know, I guess, you know, within a human lifetime, there's probably never see one.
Yeah, I guess that's a major sort of source of contention, is should these sorts of things actually be out there? Because, you know, you do have these giant reactors running around doing random things randomly all over the place. So they should get some of these things occasionally. If some of these things are reasonably stable, then at some point in some of these extreme environments, you should be making them. And that means occasionally you should be seeing traces of them. You know, again, looking at these cross sections and things like that, probabilities of seeing anything that you wouldn't look at as noise are probably very small, even assuming that they exist, right? Even assuming they exist, detecting them might be impossible just because you have to do it through so much other noise.
I think it might have been Oganessian who was theorizing that there might be isotopes that were stable on like the million-year scale. And if they have like a half-life of a million years, then there's a non-zero possibility of finding them in the dirt.
You know? Yeah.
But you're going to be looking for one atom in probably a mountain range. You know, so want to dig up the Rocky Mountains looking for one atom of element 125?
Isn't that what they're doing when they're fracking?
No, I don't think they're doing anything that constructive with fracking. They're just making money.
All right.
And it would be pretty easy to miss an atom of material.
I mean, if it was an expensive enough atom of material, they wouldn't miss it when they were fracking.
That's true. I like these papers from the Russian group because they're very descriptive. They get into the process. They really let you know what's going on. Oh, that was the other thing, is they've talked about creating them with multiple nuclear explosions in close proximity. See, I guess the idea is that in the center of a nuclear explosion, you can get a really high concentration of neutrons for a very short period of time, but then you could amplify that by having a nearby explosion that was blasting neutrons out in every direction, because fission reactions create a lot of neutron radiation. But nobody's been ambitious enough to set off like a rapid series of nuclear explosions.
I think there's a treaty or something.
Oh, they're not allowed to do that anymore, huh? You can't even do that underground now?
I thought we weren't supposed to do any sort of nuclear testing at all.
Oh, I thought it was just above ground. I haven't really paid too close of attention.
I could be completely off. I mean...
They tried to play it down in the paper. They're like, we just need soft nuclear explosions.
Yeah, bans nuclear explosions for both civilian and military purposes in all environments. Has not entered into force because 8 specific states have not ratified the treaty, which probably includes us. We've signed, but not ratified, I think.
So they're probably doing it right now. Probably doing it right now at like Area 51 or something underground.
Yeah, but the Russians have signed and ratified it.
Oh, so they're abiding by it, huh?
I didn't say that. I just said they signed and ratified. But yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, we can talk to Donald, see if he thinks it's a good idea.
Oh, he wants to limit all regulations. That's right. He'll get behind it.
So yeah, I mean, I guess that's a good idea. We can just set up the experiment, take a couple of nukes, and see what that does. And to be honest, I'm perfectly happy supervising that experiment. Anybody who's got the money for it.
Well, that's good, because I'm not going anywhere near that damn thing.
Anything else with these guys?
I think that was all the highlights. If you had anything else you wanted to add, feel free to jump in. I think we hit all the highlights.
Yeah, I think we talked about everything as far as that's concerned. Yeah, I don't really know if we want to get too much into the different kinds of decays. That's actually all in freshman level physics books. I'm not sure if we really want to talk too much about their predictions. I did like their predictions. Their comparison to experiments section in the decay properties and stability of the heaviest elements, especially because the ratio here between the experimental half-life and the theoretical half-life, those are off by at least an order of magnitude. I shouldn't say off by an order of magnitude. The ratio of that range is between 1/10, 100 times the theoretical prediction. And they've got like a billion data points. So it's just this huge scatter thing with a little line going through it. I guess the nice thing is that it doesn't vary too much with the atomic number. It does when you get high enough, but it doesn't vary too much with the atomic number. It's just all over the place as far as the atomic number is concerned. But when you start looking at the differences between the half-life, if you organize them by half-life, the longer the half-life, the more the deviation. In fact, the longer the half-life, the greater the experimental half-life is to the theoretical half-life. So it keeps getting longer and longer and longer. So that if they're predicting 100 years, according to this, it could be as much as, you know, 10 to the fourth longer. So it could be a million years based on this deviation. It could also end up right on top of there. There are a couple of things there, but still, it could be as far as that.
It's fascinating that it seems like their theoretical and experimental data correlate really well on the like energy of decay for the alpha particles and so forth, but their time, like the decay time, seems to be a much harder thing to nail down.
I think they use more approximations and things like that in that particular situation. I mean, they do all sorts of strange things, like have different sort of calculated numbers for this and that and the other thing, mostly if the proton number is odd or even if the neutron number is odd or even and stuff like that. I think a lot of these things are rules of thumb that they just have some sort of empirical number for. That may not be the best thing. 351 years, the half-life of californium. I think that's all we talked about. The two islands of stabilities, the stable isotopes. We could talk about the details of these Fermi functions if you really, really want to.
No.
Okay.
Wait, did they mention bubble nuclei in that paper?
What do you mean by bubble nuclei?
I came across that idea when I was looking this stuff up a few years ago. Apparently, there's the possibility that some of these super heavy elements that will have like a low density region in the center, and they call them bubble nuclei. And I guess that's because the lateral binding energy will be higher than the radial binding energy. And so there might be a new kind of nuclear structure that they've theoretically predicted could exist.
No, I don't think they talked about that. They did talk about the liquid drop model of the nucleus, but that's a completely different thing.
I've seen like at least three different models to predict nuclear structure, and they're all kind of competing still because they, I guess they haven't really nailed it down, which is why, you know, it's so hard to make these calculations. These are many body problems, you know.
They are apparently a little bit difficult. So the three ways that they do this are the macro-microscopal method, the generalized Thomas Fermi method, and the self-consistent Hartree-Fock method. And the ones that they were doing here were the macro-microscopal method. But they also compared some different things to different places. So that's all. This macro-microscopal method seems to be very, very close to what they talk about in those modern physics texts that I was talking about. In fact, a lot of the things that they were doing in the decay properties and stability of the heaviest elements, after I read these, I went to my old modern physics book, and they had the same formula sitting in there. But I'm not sure if that's because of the way that they were actually doing this. Actually, I'm sure it's not, because what they do is they add in somewhere these potentials, and they add in some fairly complicated potentials. The Kawa potential, this Wood-Saxon potential, and a two-center shell model potential.
And dang. Oh, that's right, because there's these different deformations that happen with these super heavy elements. Sometimes they get like a dumbbell shape to them, and other times they return to a sphericity. I'm guessing that the more spherical nuclei are, they're more stable. But I guess they get so big that some of these isotopes are more stable when they have like a dumbbell shape, so they've got double centers, and they talk about like the distance between those centers.
Yeah, I've seen some stuff like that.
I guess that's an aspect of the liquid drop model where you get like almost a surface tension across the nucleus, huh?
Yeah, I think that's the way they first approached nuclear physics is through that. I've got a book on the physics of fluids and solids, and he keeps referencing back to that sort of stuff. Because I think that's how he actually got into the physics of the authors got into the physics of fluid as he was dealing with nuclear physics. And that's the way they were studying the nucleus before they figured out about things like, you know, works and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they haven't quite figured out how important these shell structure corrections are going to be. The really heavy element in the region that we haven't reached yet.
Yeah, they've got all sorts of problems. You're talking about shell structure stuff. You also have the relativistic effects. Things just get worse and worse. But that's sort of what happens. I mean, you don't have to worry too much about that. You know, either they'll find these things or they won't. But, I mean, as far as the predictions are concerned, they seem pretty fine. But, you know, as long as you've got three different ways of doing things and they all say about the same thing, then something will happen in that region, probably. Unless they're all three based on similar things somewhere that's wrong. Makes life more interesting if it is. Okay, well, if that's all we've got, that's all we've got.
That's it.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Randy.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, listeners.
Yes, thank you, listeners. We're very glad to have you.
You have a good night, Jim.
I will. Bye now.
Bye.